Since it is continuing to play, I'll continue to comment on it. The byline there of the commercial, paid for by the Billy Graham Evangelical Association, says that God used the cross, and this is now, they've already introduced this cross, this is the cross of Billy Graham, to save people and to introduce them to Jesus. Now, every aspect of this is wrong. Not only doesn't God have a cross, not only is the cross pagan, not only would God not use anything that Billy Graham has to say, much less using a cross of Billy Graham. The whole purpose of Yahusha was to introduce us to Yahweh. You know, God does not have any interest in introducing us to Jesus. I mean, not only is the name wrong, the whole perspective is wrong. And that's how screwed up Christians are. The whole purpose of Yahusha becoming the corporeal manifestation of the Torah, of the word of Yahweh, is to introduce us to Yahweh so that we can see what it's like to be Torah observant, so we can see what it's like to be the Son of God, so we can ourselves respond based upon what we are seeing, what we are witnessing. And it's all designed to bring us to introduce us to make us more familiar with Yahweh, not the opposite way around. Just pathetic. And you know, ultimately, God is going to rebuke them. This is what he has to say in Yeshayah 17:13. It's the passage we were considering at the close of our program yesterday. And he will rebuke them, issuing a warning against them, while criticizing their corruption. Garar ba, he will disapprove and reprimand them, accusing them of wrongdoing, exposing and admonishing them. And so they will be forced to flee on account of being alienated. Now, I'm going to read the rest of this passage in a moment, but it reminds me of something that Yahusha said at the conclusion of his Sermon on the Mount. He was talking about how warning all who would listen to him that they should be wary of a wolf in sheep's clothing. They should be wary of Paul, of someone who pretends to be one of them that actually preys on them. And then he talks about fruit and trees. And he does at great length of saying that you know, there's this misconception among people that there's you could look to the good even if what somebody is saying isn't wholly true, that there's always some truth woven into it, some good that can be found there. You know, like Paul's testimony on love and Corinthians is nurturing, even if his testimony about being demon-possessed and being insane in his second letter to the Corinthians isn't. And God is saying, no, that's not the case. That a bad tree gives bad fruit, period. Don't eat from it. And there is no bad that comes from a good tree. You can rely on it. He's comparing what he's offering to what Paul offered. And then he says, you know, there'll come a day when people call out to me and say, you know, Lord, Lord. And he's saying, not a single person calling me Lord is going to enter the kingdom of heaven. Not one. And then not listening to him again, he presents them saying, but Lord, Lord, didn't we do all this wonderful stuff in your name? Didn't we prophesy in your name? Didn't we reveal things in your name? Didn't we drive out demons in your name? Didn't we build mighty institutions in your name? Which is all the Christian response. Didn't we do all this great stuff? And he's going to say, no, get away from me. Get out of here. I don't know you. And so they will be forced to flee after he rebukes them. criticizing their corruption. Because he doesn't know them, they're alienated. And so we have here, yet again, and we have lots of them, affirmation that there's really nothing that Yahusha said that wasn't already presented in the Torah and prophets. And he will rebuke them, issuing a warning against them while criticizing the corruption, and they will be forced to flee on account of not knowing him, of being alienated. It's what he cited at the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount. And they will be chased away, just as the chaff on the hills, before the approaching presence of the Spirit, and like a tumbleweed, a chariot wheel of a troop transport before the approaching presence of the storm. You know, we began this discussion talking about the metaphor of grain and the chaff being that which is dried up, hard, unreceptive. It's prone to being blown away, dying, of no value. And here, God is making that statement. You know, if you are those who are alienated, if you're not the grain that has been harvested, then you're going to be chafed off as chaff. God's not going to allow the chaff in his home. He's going to chase them off. He's going to blow them away before the Spirit. The Spirit that is so essential to enlightening us, nurturing us, protecting us, perfecting us, is going to be the same Spirit that blows them away. You know, it's gets right back to you're either on God's side, you're part of his family, or you're going to die. You're estranged from him. The Spirit that plays such an important role in the lives of Yah's children is a foe to those who have rejected him, blowing them away before the approaching presence of the storm, the gale, the tempest, the whirling wind. The part of this that grabs my attention is that even as Yahweh is blowing away what is, by my estimate, as many as 150 million Islamic jihadists out of Israel, eliminating Islam's ability to wage war. He says that he's doing so before the approaching presence of the storm. In other words, things are going to get worse. This, the most horrific act probably in human history in terms of numbers of men armed and with deadly intent against Israel, is just the wind before the storm. Now, in this particular case, Muslims are going to act heinously. They're going to be extremely destructive and deadly. This is a consequence of what they have done. God is responding to them. Now, typically, God just lets humans kill one another. It's what we humans have become really good at doing. We make weaponry to kill. NATO is a force that's designed to prevail by the threat of death and destruction. We're really good at killing. And God typically just lets us kill. But in this particular case, God can't do that. Because if he did, then one of the promises that he has made, the one to Abraham, to ultimately reconcile his relationship with his children, the one he made through Hosea, to remedy this situation, the promise that he made through the prophet Zechariah to embrace his children, to reconcile his covenant with them, the promise that we find in Yirmiyah when the covenant is renewed. The only way for that to happen is for God to intervene. Otherwise, the Muslims flooding into Israel would completely destroy not only the land, but the chosen people, wiping them out to the last. It would be an even more merciless reenactment of what happened throughout the Ukraine. And so God has to intervene. for him to honor his promise. Now, he's not going to intervene and linger and micromanage things. He's going to return to heaven and allow men to be as merciless as they wish to be. But here he did engage. And as these Muslims flood into Israel as a tidal wave, and they're all bellowing, Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater, Allah is more powerful, Allah is older, believing that they are killing in the cause of their wannabe God, the one true God is going to pursue them, sending them into oblivion. That's a rude awakening. But if you'll notice that while Yahweh's spirit is going to stop the Islamic assault, blowing the invading Muslims out of his land, another storm is approaching. I suspect this is indicative of the first and second phases of the Magog War. According to Yahusha's testimony in Revelation, one in four people on earth, perhaps representing the entire Islamic population, are going to succumb initially, annihilated by God. And then an even more devastating storm is going to devour a third of those who remain. Because it appears that based upon what follows, America is going to somehow engage, turning this regional conflict into World War III. Yahweh is not the least bit tolerant of religion, nor politics, patriotism, militarism, or man's economics endeavors, which whereby he prospers as a result of promoting these things. Especially when they are in league with the adversary and inspired by the Lord, and they seek to destroy his people, his land, and his purpose. These Muslims, aided as they are by the West, will be as repulsive and destructive as the world has ever seen, devastating everything in their path. All in the name of the most militaristic religion and demonic God ever conceived by man. Corrupt beyond hope. Yahweh knows that if he does not intervene at this time and eradicate them, left to their own devices, these Islamic militants will destroy his land, his people, and they would negate his promise, making all of Yisrael uninhabitable. God is not going to allow that to occur. We have his promise. One aspect of this prophecy that is extremely important to understand is that Yahweh only intervenes to save Israel, not the rest of the world. And he only does so at the very last moment, hoping that his people will finally realize that they cannot defend themselves. He is not offering to protect Americans, Europe, Africa, Asia, or the Middle East. You know, I was just reading during the commercial break that NATO is going to bolster its forces in Eastern Europe. So it's complaining that Russia is being aggressive by massing some 20 or 30,000 of its troops in its own country next to the Eastern Ukrainian border. And that the proper response to that is to amass NATO forces in Eastern Europe. This is how wars begin. This is exactly the opposite of what one should be doing. Now, man has a propensity to do the wrong thing, almost always does. It's just like everything in the Billy Graham ad is counter to the truth. It's opposite of what God intends and what God is doing and what God cares about. And nonetheless, they promote it. Almost everything America and NATO are doing relative to this disaster, what has become a disaster in the Ukraine, at the Ukrainians' fault, by the way, is the opposite of what is moral, appropriate, informed, just. Now, in this war, the odds in human terms are great. Now, we're talking about the Magog War, the Islamic attack on Israel. Muslims outnumber Israelites more than 100 to 1. there are not only 1.5 billion Muslims, there are only 15 million Jews. But only 6 million of those Jews are in Israel. The rest will have no role in that war, and yet we're told of the 1.5 billion Muslims that they're going to come from many Islamic countries, and they're going to be massive in number from those countries. Equally revealing, while Israel has successfully defended itself against the unified rage of Islam in the War of Independence in 1948, in the Six Days War in 1967, and the surprise attack launched against Israel on the Yom Kippur War in 1974. This time, and what I suspect will be 2027, there will no longer have the capacity to defend themselves. Americans' weapons wielded by Muslims will turn the tide, requiring Yahweh to intervene. It's going to be just wave after wave of, and I want to say humanity, but there's nothing human about a jihadist. Now, over the past decade, the United States has provided 25 times more military hardware to Islamic nations than it has to Israel. So beyond the manpower edge of 100-1, we have 25-1 that Israel is outgunned. The outcome, apart from God's intervention, would be total and complete annihilation. Anti-Semitic rage, as it has in the Ukraine, will escalate worldwide, as will mankind's propensity through propaganda and patriotism to turn this religious conflict into a global war. Now, there's an item that was stated on the news, but I actually clipped an article on it. There is an American who was working as an independent contractor. His name is Jonathan J. Pollard for the U.S. Navy. And as an independent contractor for the U.S. Navy, he came across information that he thought was in Israel's interest and provided that information to Israel. Now, in the past, someone who is convicted of spying, and I'm not even sure he was really spying, he was an analyst for the American Navy and saw information that America wasn't doing what it said. It was being hypocritical. And he supplied that information to Israel. But when an ally is caught spying on America, typically the sentence is to return them to their country, to expel them. Sometimes there's a year in prison, and then they're expelled. This man has been in prison for almost 30 years. The reason I digress back into the news is the case of Jonathan Pollard is relevant. Beyond the fact that it should not even be possible to be traitorous, to work against America's security interests by sharing information that is helpful to the defense of Israel. That, according to God's testimony, doing that kind of thing, defending Israel, working on behalf of Israel, supporting Israel, is the means to be blessed by Yahweh. And withholding information from Israel, aiding and abetting Israel's foes, is the straight path to being cursed by God. So beyond the fact that the crime that he committed is actually the single most important and valuable thing that an individual can do on behalf of any country to endear that country with God, and he's in prison for pleasing God. Beyond that, he's been in prison for 10 times longer than he should be. He's serving a life sentence for this. And now the United States government wants to use him as a pawn to get concessions out of Israel regarding them giving their land, which God gave them, to these very Muslims that in this prophecy God is saying, I'm going to blow away. I'm going to expose them. I'm going to condemn them. And then I'm going to blow them out of existence. Wow. It tells you just right down at their core how anti-Semitic America is. I mean, the reason he hasn't been released is because there are political and military leaders that don't want him released, that look at Israel as being a menace, as being their foe, as being the real enemy. That's right down at the core of America's most powerful institutions, political institutions and military institutions, even the State Department. It just shows you just how anti-Semitic the country is, and the whole world is going to become more and more anti-Semitic. Matter of fact, in this particular prophecy, one of the last comments that God's going to make is that he himself, after having blown these people away, these Muslims who would destroy his land and his people, he actually goes and rescues the remnant of Yehudim, of Israelites from America. And the fact that he has to intervene to rescue them tells you how badly they are being mistreated by those singing God Bless America. Well, the anti-Jewish rhetoric is already on the rise in Europe. It's on the rise in Asia and the Americas. It could well lead to nuclear holocaust, with Iran, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia initially initiating the carnage and America responding, drawing Russia and China and Europe into the fray. There will also be a series of devastating natural disasters, including an asteroid strike. It's going to be hell on earth. Now, according to the timeline Yahweh has provided, before the approaching storm of World War III, there's going to be an onslaught of Islamic terrorism. Many will die. And yet Muslims will fail in their attempt to destroy Israel. According to God, death and destruction will be the lot of those who loot and prey upon Yahweh's favorite place and his chosen people. Hauntingly, while Muslims try, America has been the only nation to successfully plunder Israel of her most valuable and important asset, her God-given gift, the Promised Land. The United States forced Israel to give back the Sinai and then Gaza, even southern Lebanon, followed by the control of large swaths of the West Bank. America did it to sell arms to the Islamic nations and to buy oil more cheaply. This has earned the U.S. the wrath of God. He will soon warn America in this prophecy, a plea designed to encourage those who listen to him to disassociate from the American government and its military. This is the worst time to be political and to be patriotic. Even today, as I speak these words, a BBC headline screamed, "President Obama has again warned Israel of international fallout if it does not accept the framework of a U.S. peace deal with the Palestinians," end quote. That deal would result in the resetting of the borders between Israel and the future Palestinian state, while determining the status of Jerusalem. It is the basis of the treaty that diminishes Israel in width at the nation's midsection to less than 5 miles. Inexplicitly, America has positioned itself in direct opposition to God. That's why when I go to a sports event and they want to sing God Bless America, I always walk to the restroom or to the confession stand. I'm not singing it. I'm not going to poke my finger in God's eye. That's why when they want to have you remove your hat and put your hand over your heart and stand reverently as they parade the American flag while everyone sings the American anthem to show their allegiance to this country, I always leave my seat so that I can be elsewhere. America has positioned itself in direct opposition to God. It's obvious with everything we say and everything we do. But we're getting ahead of Yahweh's story just a little. For now, he wants us to know that the next time Islamic jihadists attack Israel en masse, he himself will intervene to stop them abruptly. Approaching the time, Le'eth, nearing the point in time and occasion, upon the season and right time of sunset, Erebah, of evening, of night, the close of the day when things grow dark. This, by the way, Arab, is the transliteration of Arab, is how we get the word Arab. God is speaking of the Arab sunset. Approaching the timing of the Arab sunset. Then behold, terrorism. Sudden and dreadful calamitous destruction perpetrated on civilian populations, fear-inducing destruction, which results in the cessation of life. In the time before the arrival of the dawn of morning, of the arrival of light, it is gone. He is gone, for he has failed. This is the fate of those deceived regarding their merits, Chelak. This is what happens as a result of flattering propaganda. The reward and booty of those seeking territory, the share of what is apportioned to those who have been seduced, who pillage and plunder us, Shaka, who engage militarily, trying to conquer and rob us. And the lot, the Garal, the recompense, the retribution, even the choice of those who seek to conquer us, carrying off the spoils of war, Bazaz, who use force to engage in battle, who prey upon us, seizing what belongs to us. Yashayah, salvation is from Yah. Isaiah 17:14. It was subtle, but did you notice it? It becomes first person plural in this statement. God associates himself with Yisrael. He says that this is the fate of those who pillage us, who plunder us. The fate of those who seek to conquer us. It is what Yisrael means, after all. It's individuals who engage and endure with God. With God. Makes it us, doesn't it? This is what it means to be a Yehudim. Individuals who relate to Yah, who are related to Yah. This is what is conveyed by Yahweh's name when his arm reaches down and out with an open hand to the two people standing in his name side by side, reaching up to him. That's what the covenant is all about. It's us, of our Heavenly Father and his children. It's about us. God takes this personally. They came to destroy us, with God speaking in first person. There's some rather insightful aspects of this. The first of them is that in the midst of the global fixation on the Arab Spring, God calls this time the Arab Sunset. Arab. Shows he has a sense of humor, nothing else. This spring became an Islamic Reformation, which is what led to the Arab sunset. And then we have Ba'ala'ah. It is Allah made a feminine noun with the ah ending, but just Allah'ah. And the B that comes before it means in Allah, with Allah. Ba, Allah. It's the Hebrew word for terrorism. Allah's terrorism. Calamitous destruction perpetrated on civilian populations. Fear inducing destruction, which results in the cessation of life, all in the name of Allah. Arab sunset, Allah's terrorism. Then before the time of dawn, it's over, it's gone. Allah fails. Satan fails. It's the fate of those deceived regarding their merits. Boy, I tell you what. As I posted Prophet of Doom online, it's the most comprehensive analysis of the five earliest Islamic sources. It's the book that takes the Quran and sets it into chronological order and into the context of Muhammad's life using the two chronological narratives and collections of hadith, the sirah, biography of Muhammad, and the tariq, history of Islam's formation. And as I presented the Quran in chronological order in the context of Muhammad's life, I received thousands of emails from misled, from deceived Muslims. It's almost always the case with the religious mindset that they are saved, that they are God's pals, that they know the truth, and that anybody that criticizes them or their religion is demonic and hell-bent. Well, the fact is they're deceived regarding their merits. Now, in the case of Christians, they're deceived regarding doing things that are inspired by God. They're deceived in terms of knowing God. They're deceived about being saved by God. They're deceived by many things. In the case of Muslims, Allah tells Muslims in the Quran, you will know that I am Allah and that I am superior by comparing what I do with you versus what's accomplished in Christian and in Jewish and atheist countries. And, of course, what Muslims have seen, at least those with their eyes open, which would be a very small percentage of them, is that the most horrible places to live, the most impoverished, the most militaristic, the most sexist, the most depraved, the most violent, the least educated, the least healthy places on earth to live are in Islamic countries. They are deceived regarding their merits. And they are arrogant. Oh, you just wait. You know what? The fastest growing religion, we will become victorious over you. You're just jealous of our success. Arrogant regarding their merits. And the religious propaganda that is promoted by Muslims is just nauseating. There's a video called The Miracles of the Quran that spouts all of this stuff that proves that Allah and the Quran are inspired. And you listen to their proofs, and it's just ludicrous. They've just been deceived. And yet in the Quran, not only do you find the eighth surah of the Quran touting stealing. It's called the spoils of war. And it begins by saying that stealing is lawful and good. It even speaks of plunder and pillage as being approved by Allah. That's what God rails against. He says, no, you shouldn't make a practice of stealing. But according to Allah, it's A-okay, particularly if you're plundering Jews. And God's going to say, no. Not only are you deceived regarding your merits and that Allah isn't an effective force, but it isn't right to plunder and pillage. The Yah's position here is the antithesis of Allah's, the Quran's, and Islam's. But God said, you know, there's a consequence for your actions. This is, you will act. This is the consequence of your actions. The consequence of you trying to pillage the promised land, the consequence of you being deceived regarding your merits, the consequence of you trying to conquer and carry off the things in the spoils of war, as the Quran 8 surah so boldly proclaims, is that you're going to be blown away into oblivion. So God is taking the time here to say, you know, I'm not just acting and going to blow them away. I'm going to explain to those whose eyes are open, who are willing to listen, whose minds are open, why I'm doing this. I want you to know why I'm doing this. To be blown away by the Spirit as opposed to being born again by the Spirit is the fate of those who are deceived regarding the merits of their religion, of those who think it's appropriate to plunder and pillage, which is what America has done to Israel. It's the lot of those who seek to conquer, carrying off the spoils of war, as mankind's military institutions have done over the millennia. So rather than being the Arab Spring, this is the Arab sunset, according to God, the ultimate consequence of Islam's destructive and deadly nature. The word Arab, meaning lack of light, is indistinguishable in the Hebrew text from Arab, the desolate places and race universally associated with Islamic terrorism. As a result of Islam, Arab and Muslim are promoted as being synonymous and thus indistinguishable. This religion proves every day that Yahweh's prophecies of it through Ishmael were accurate. They are wild asses of men. Their hands are raised against their brother's hands against them, and they live in hostility with the entire world. Well, that's brought us to the end of our program for today. It's my pleasure being with you. I want to thank both Daniel and Glenn for their participation in our program today. We look forward to being with you tomorrow and between now and then. May God bless.